This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
I will not shut up about slavery. It is not a distant memory that African Americans should get over, relegate to dust, like the millions of Africans who did not survive it. It is not something that began and ended like a beating or a trial. It was instituted and embraced to build a country. Then it evolved, and hundreds of years later remains ingrained in the way we live, whether we are watching from an uncomfortable, sometimes guilty perch, or listening on the edge of despair and irrelevance every day.
That is Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley reading from her brand new book, The Burden: African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery.
Much of white America has spent centuries race-splaining, mocking the idea that racism exists or demanding evidence of it, or expressing sorrow about it while doing little or nothing to end it. Slavery continues to color our journey darkly, always has, always will, until we put the burden down.
Rochelle Riley, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you so much. I always love being here.
Well, we've had you on this program so many times as you wore your hat of the Free Press columnist, but you are here now as an author and editor of your new book, The Burden. It's a collection of two dozen essays, yours plus 23 other writers. What is the collective plea being made by all of these writers in these essays?
More than anything, we want people to understand that we have not had this conversation. There is the assumption that with each passing week, month, year, decade, that as we move farther away from slavery, we're done with it. We've had it. No, we've never had it. And there are things that exist as a part of the way we live in America that are still reminiscent of slavery, that are still part of the legal challenge that exists, the obstacles that have been put in the way of African Americans. As I say in the book, slavery didn't end. It just changed addresses. We left plantations, and it moved into corporations, into media companies, into schools, into government. And we have to, at some point, deal with it. And I'm hoping this will make us deal with it.
Now, before we get into who is in this book and what they're saying, talk about what gave you the idea to do this book and when.
I have wanted to write about this for some time. I thought I'll write a column. I'll write a book. And it all sort of crystallized for me about 3 years ago when this columnist at the Pittsburgh paper, and columnists have the right to have whatever opinion they want, but they can still be wrong. And he wrote this column that said, God, black people have got to get over slavery. This whole thing about talking about it like it still impacts you. It has no impact on African Americans today. And quite frankly, your lives are better off, you know, than had you stayed in Africa. And I thought, oh, my God. And so the first thing I did was write a Facebook post and just said, I'm so angry that there's someone who not only still feels this way, but has a public platform to put that out there like it's true. What country has he been to that he can say this? And how does he know what Africa might have been like had all of these people not been stolen from there? And that's not even the point. He knows that these things are true about the way African Americans are treated. This is not folly, and this is not accusation. These are things that are true. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to write a column. I'm not going to write one book. I'm going to get a chorus of people to write because it won't just be my voice. It'll be lots of people.
And tell us some of the voices that are in this book.
I can tell you that this was amazing. I never set out to actually have 24 people. I thought, I'll get a dozen people. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be a nice little Everybody I asked.
So you reached out and asked them to write essays specifically for the book, no?
Specifically for the book, but I did not give them a topic. Mm-hmm. And that was what was amazing. I said, this is what the theme is. Every one of them came back different.
So these were not edited from previous writings. This was served up fresh for The Burden.
These people stopped what they were doing. Alelia Bundles, who is the great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker, the first black female millionaire in America, literally was in the middle of writing her book, and she stopped to write her piece on the armor we still need, because we still have to wear armor. Leonard Pitts, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, one of my favorite people. I call him the blueprint. I learn about being a columnist from him. He stopped what he was doing on his project to write about the justice system or the injustice system, because that still exists. Aisha Hines, the actress who was so amazing as Harriet Tubman in Underground, that series that should still be on television, and I'm still mad about it, she literally asked me, she said, why are people surprised that somebody like Barack Obama, who is a Harvard-educated, amazing attorney, brilliant, that he should grow up to be president? We do not embrace our own greatness because we've been taught that we're not great. And so she wrote her piece. So every piece is different. Every piece is amazing. And every piece speaks to the idea that this is still real. This is still a burden that we have to put down to be able to truly be free and truly excel.
And you have Michigan voices in as well.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe the second person I called was Betty DeRamus, the former Detroit News columnist. And I thought she might write about some of the themes she's explored about trying to put families back together. This is the other thing that really makes me mad. People constantly harp on how black families don't work. Well, you tore black families apart, sending children to one plantation, the dads to another one, the moms to a third one. Really? And we don't ever want to talk about what that led to. Centuries of doing that. And so we're a century and a half out, and it's like, oh, let's not talk about it. I thought she would write about some of those stories that she told of the fathers and husbands who went to find their families. Instead, she told about the first time she realized what racism was. Mm-hmm. So you never know. You just, you know. And Herb Boyd, who just wrote his book about Black Detroit, mm-hmm. wrote about the black press and why it's necessary for us to sometimes tell our own stories.
Your book starts with your essay digging into the question, you know, why talk about slavery and race and why not move on? And you get that an awful lot from readers, don't you? Like, this ended in the Civil War. Why do we need to talk about it? Or, my family came here after the Civil War. We didn't own slaves. And you and other writers in this book address that.
The first thing you have to understand is no one is accusing anybody individually of doing anything. I am not standing here talking to you in 2018 saying this is your fault. What I'm saying is this is something America did to an entire group of people. And at some point, we have to talk about that and deal with that. The first thing people think about is, oh, it's about reparations. You want money. No, it's not about reparations. It's about repairing. There was an emotional toll, an emotional damage that still happens now. My daughter was called the N-word when she was 5 years old. That was, you know, not in the 18th or 19th century. So if that can still happen, if we can still live in a society where there's still these types of obstacles, these types of barriers to being really happy and really free, we have to do something about it because the only people who carry that burden are African Americans.
It strikes me, as I read all of these essays, and I want to say, even though I know it's published by, you know, the Wayne State University Press, yes. It is not academic, people. I read this in a car trip, and everybody's writing is so excellent that it just pulls you through. And what I thought I got out of it is affirmation, if you are black, where you're like, I'm not the only one who feels this way. For white readers, there's not a finger of blame. It's enlightenment. I mean, what do you hope white people get out of reading this?
You just said it, literally. It's realization and enlightenment. All we want you to do is to understand that this is how we feel. This is real. It's just like if you're in your family and somebody in your family is hurting. Even if you don't necessarily understand why they're hurting, do you ignore them? Do you decide, I don't care because I don't get what's wrong with you? No, you at least have some empathy for what they're dealing with. That's all we're asking for. Pay attention to the fact that these things are real. And this is something we've carried for a long time, and it's time for us to put the burden down.
Torrence Latham argues in his essay, our new civil rights movement will begin in our schools. What is this new civil rights movement? How is it being revealed?
I have spent the past 10 years on this One America, One History campaign, where if we taught all children, all American history, we would be so much better off. The idea that we relegate black history to an interesting event-driven teaching in every February instead of literally talking about what the contributions of African Americans have been to this shared history of America and building of America. First of all, we'd end some of the racism because you don't think the black people didn't ever do anything. And second, it would get rid of this idea that black people are so inferior that it's not worth the conversation about why we're equal.
Who do you hope reads this book?
Everybody. I want this in every library. I want this in every home. I want a parent to sit down with their child and go through a couple of them and say, this is why, no matter how much better off things are, no matter how much we think that race is not a problem, and no matter how much people say things that are ridiculous, like we live in a post-racial society, this is why we don't. This is why we still have to do something. I want this to be a conversation starter in every state.
What did you learn from doing this?
I learned that I wasn't alone. I knew I wasn't alone, but when you ask people to bear themselves and to bring, as I read these, I read them the same way you did. Oh my God, this was passion. Everybody was great. I thought this will help. this is actually something that might help. And I felt so mesmerized by that idea that maybe we can actually have a conversation now. So, but I can tell you one of the things that I learned, and I learned this from Herb Boyd's book, but we talked about it again while we were editing this, while I was editing with them. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there were slaves in Detroit. I didn't know the sheer number of black men who go to prison for crimes they didn't commit, and in larger numbers. Now, everybody sort of knows the general story, but how bad it is. I didn't know that every single person in this book had a moment where they remembered the first time they were treated like the N-word. I remember the first time I was called the N-word. I remember the last time. It was last week. So those things were great reminders that, yes, it is still a burden, and, yes, we are the only ones carrying it, and, yes, by God, it's time to do something about it.
Rochelle Riley, her book is The Burden, African Americans and the Enduring Impact of Slavery. There is a book launch party tomorrow night at the Charles Wright Museum of African American History in Detroit. Rochelle will be there along with Nicole Hannah-Jones and Leonard Pitts Jr., both contributors to this book. And then in the following days, she's going to be traveling. She's going to be on the road, going around the state, often with other contributors.
Absolutely.
Signing and talking about The Burden. And you can get all the dates, all the information by going to her website, RochelleRiley.com. Thank you so much. It is a powerful, powerful book, and thank you.
Thank you.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.